Good evening. This is the Tuesday, November 1st, 2011 meeting of the Pacifico National Board Elections Committee, calling to order at 8:46 p.m. We have a quorum, I believe. Manage, I'll call the roll. Our secretary hasn't yet arrived. Manage Saba?
Yes, present.
Okay. Tracy Rosenberg? Margie Wilkinson? Margie Murray? Okay. Michael Novick? Okay. Anthony Fest?
Here.
Kevin White? Carolyn Burden, I'm here. Nancy Saibara Naritomi. Okay, Kimberly Orendorf. Wesley Bethune. Bob Lederer.
Here.
Okay, we have Bill Crozier, the volunteer, and Ken Aaron.
Here.
Ken, oh, you missed me.
Oh, I'm so sorry. How did I leave you off? Definitely. Jane Gatewood. Sorry
I'm
about
here.
That. Mm-hmm. I see my list was defective. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm...
all right, the meeting then...
That's six.
Called... Mm-hmm. All right, that's good. Now, first item is... approving the agenda. Sorry, the draft I sent out did not have that in it. So approving the agenda. Someone had a motion to amend the agenda. Jane?
Yeah, this is Jane. I wanted to add the RFP work, the RFP under old business, and I wanted to move the discussion of the staff, whatever it is, to old to be part of the discussion of database integrity, because it sounds like the same topic to me.
Oh, now which did you want to move from where?
You have something called under, what do you have? You have staff registry, new business, item
oh, yes.
Four, staff registry, list registry, progress report. Oh. Isn't that really part of the whole database integrity question?
It could be, yes. Any comments on that? Any objections to moving that? All right, we'll move number four under new business to number one, database integrity work group. Okay, and the other change was...
Under old business, I just wanted to add the RFP so we could touch on that.
Okay, I will kind of object to that because I don't think we're ready to do an RFP yet. We can discuss it under old business, but did you actually want to do one or move to doing one? I didn't think we were ready for that.
No, I think we need to talk about it under old business because I think it's the timing is urgent and we just need to touch base on it.
All right. Any objections to that then?
For discussion, but there's no motions being presented.
For discussion, yes. Uh-huh.
I wouldn't object as long as it's at the bottom of old business.
Yeah, all right, that's fine. I'll move that then. Any other changes?
Can I ask? I don't have the. I haven't received the agenda.
Hmm.
You haven't? Oh, dear. I sent it to you. What email? Let me send it to you again.
You know... Carolyn, I don't mean to be a stickler, but I think that even without Kimmery, we don't have a quorum.
My feeling is that we really need to do some business.
True.
And what we can do is if and when we get a quorum tonight or next week, we can move to ratify everything that we do tonight. I
that
don't,
sounds good.
Otherwise... we'll never end up doing anything. That's
because,
quite legal.
Because I see you've labeled Ken as not a committee member but a work group volunteer. Is that correct?
Well, Ken, I wasn't sure of Ken's position. He's a director, so he can attend any meeting he likes, and he offered to be interested in this meeting and to work with us on the especially on the membership issues.
Okay.
So I put him on the list, and I'm not sure.
I'm sorry. I thought that you wanted members, two from each station, so me and Mark joined.
Yes, I did, and I'm not sure how that's going to play out because we have a motion on here limiting members, which we can always amend. But since you did offer to help, and since your committee is working on...
I'm sorry, you had a motion to do what?
Did you get a copy of the agenda that I sent out?
This is Jane Gatewood. My point, I was just trying to clarify whether we had quorum to contest.
No, you're correct. We don't have quorum because...
As a committee... And
that's correct, because there's 15 names that were called on the roll call.
But she had you labeled as a volunteer but not a committee member for the purpose of quorum. So
mm-hmm.
I was just trying to clarify that point, not questioning your role here at all.
Right, I understand. I'm just saying you're correct. 15 names are called and only 6 present, so...
Ken, do we have another director from Kay?
Marjorie. Oh, not another director, no.
Oh, well, then you're a director, then. You're not a volunteer. How's that? That's the role. I knew we were short someone. So I'll put you in as director, and that makes quorum.
No, it doesn't.
Why?
Because you only had 6 yeses, and you called 15 names.
Well, I called...
Bill and Nancy are both... from T. Bill, Nancy. We have 4 people from T that she called.
Really?
Bill, Wesley, Nancy. Oh, no, that's 3. Okay. Never mind.
No, I think we're okay. Ken is the director from K. Then that's legitimate. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I just moved you in the amended agenda to the list of members, not volunteers, work group volunteers.
Oh, I
see.
Mm-hmm. Why did you have work group volunteers instead of members? Okay, whatever. I don't care.
Well, because we didn't have enough members volunteering for various tasks. And Bill Crozier offered to help.
I got you. Okay.
And Jamie Ross had offered to help also because he's one of the few people who can do the STB by hand, and he's done it for several times. He's very good with the technical stuff, as you are. Okay, so I think that any other amendments to the agenda? Question? Anybody else wanting to amend the agenda?
I need an agenda. I don't know what is on the agenda.
I sent it to you, Manager. You don't have it yet? You want to refresh your screen, perhaps? Okay, let me try again. Maybe I have the wrong address.
Just here.
Got it? Okay, good. I would like to add then a formal motion under attendance that we consider what to do about our missing member from WPFW, from Kimmy Orendorf. May I add that to the agenda?
Under new business?
No, under the attendance. I'm sorry.
I agree.
Anybody want to speak to that? Frankly, I can't.
I'll speak to it. It's a pragmatic thing. If you define them. If you define membership, if you're required to have quorum to have legal votes, if you have a loose definition of who's on the committee, you're going to have too high a count, and it's going to be very difficult to achieve quorum. This happens repeatedly on committees. Everybody wants to participate. They don't participate. You don't meet quorum, and therefore your motions are not legal. So So the right thing to do is just say three unexcused absences, and you're not on the committee.
Well, I appreciate that, but to be honest, I would have done something else before this.
We're just doing the agenda now.
I would have done something before this if we had had a substitute, but we did not. I heard Jane and then Manisha.
Can we just approve the agenda, and then after we've approved the agenda, go ahead and talk about this item first?
And also, can I add a suggestion? Also, can somebody take stacks, please?
And I would be willing to take minutes if you want.
Oh, that would be very good, Jane. Thank you. Yes, we can approve the agenda if there are no objections. And then that's correct. And then we'll amend it.
So anybody, it's what you sent plus the question of committee membership under attendance. Plus the addition at the end of old business for the RFP.
RFP.
Are there any other changes that I missed?
No, those are the only three changes.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, so item two is RFP.
Mm-hmm.
And then were we going to talk about the staff list registry under database integrity, or just go ahead and leave it under new business?
You had asked to have it moved to database integrity, and nobody objected, so I moved it.
Okay.
So it's under after protocols.
Okay.
Anybody else have any questions or comments about a missing member or replacing a director from WPFW?
I can talk to that.
Please.
Isn't it up to the PNB to appoint a replacement director?
Well, it's been done informally when there's only one spot and only one volunteer. I don't even think the PNB was, I think it's happened in one or two other committees. The PNB was simply informed that the slot had been filled. So I have been asking people from W to take it to the LSB, and nobody has reported that the LSB there voted
the director,
to send anyone.
I'm sorry, just to continue. The director position is up to the PMB to appoint. So you have a choice. The PMB has a choice of appointing Campbell or Marcel or Bruce. Since Kimmery has not been in attendance, so that somebody needs to take it to the PMB to approve that replacement.
Well, as I said, the practice has been that the PMB doesn't approve people who don't want to go. So people.
Well,
don't.
I can send a note to our directors.
Hey, everyone. This is Tracy. I'm not feeling well, but I can be here for roll call.
Oh, good. Thank you.
If that will get you over the hump.
Thank you very much.
Sure, Carol.
We're discussing replacing the director from WPFW, who hasn't been here for more than three meetings, Kimmery Arndorf, and I was explaining that the PNB takes volunteers, and if there's only one slot and only one volunteer, that person is de facto approved. So there's nobody appointed who does not volunteer. We don't have a volunteer yet from WPFW is the problem.
If you want, I can send a note to our directors letting them know that Kimmery has been absent for more than three meetings, and so we currently have no director, and that we need a volunteer director to serve as a replacement.
I would appreciate that. I was hoping to.
Manisha.
Thank you. Manisha?
Can I ask a question? Yes. If this, this is a permanent replacement or just for one session or whatever?
We need
a permanent
replacement. For the year.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you.
So, Jane, you will...
I'll send a message to our directors letting them know that due to more than three or more consecutive absences, Kimmery was removed and there's no longer a director on this committee, and that the committee needs a volunteer director to serve as a replacement.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. That would be good. Bob, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to mention that... obviously, we have to follow the bylaws and the motions of the board. One thing that got amended in, I think it was in 2006, and I can find a copy of this from the minutes, because there had been a couple of instances where committee members were notified that they had passed the 3-meeting absence limit, and therefore they were off their committees. And their response was, "That's strange because I was never even notified that there were meetings. I was never on the email list, etc." So, based on that and other experiences, the board voted that the committee chair's responsibility after the second absence to notify the person by both email and phone that they're at risk of being thrown off if they don't come to the third one. So, I know that was a long time ago, and the PNB has never really kept a good compendium of all of its motions, so people may not know that that was on the books, but that should have been the procedure followed here. So I think it would be at least fair to ask Kimmery if, in fact, he was aware of these meetings, and, to see if that's the issue, or if that's not the issue, then, of course, the rule should be in effect. And certainly going forward, that should always be practiced, that after the second absence, the chair should notify the person or go through the LSP chair if they want to. But in one way or another, the person should be notified so they have a chance to make a decision.
Well, actually, Bob, I have notified Kimmery. I've called him. I've written him. And I spoke to him when I was in D.C. face-to-face, and he was apologetic and said he would try to make it. He was very much aware of the meeting.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's different.
But I didn't give what you call a formal notification that he's in danger of being thrown off. I will do that. I will put in a phone call tomorrow. But I think I'm afraid he's quite aware. He's just got other things on his mind. So, if you want to wait until I make that call, and I'll notify you that I've talked to Kimmery, and then you can go ahead and send a note to the other directors if you like. Is that all right with you?
All right.
Okay, good. Thank you. Any other items there? All right. The agenda then is approved. Next item then is minutes. I don't think we have any. We had some. I did not resend them. So I suggest we wait for them to come, for our secretary to come in and maybe update us on the minutes, if that's all right. I put next meeting down on the agenda. Now, the first Tuesday, which we had more or less adopted, is December 6th, and it conflicts with the Affiliates Committee. Is anyone here on the Affiliates Committee of the National Board? No, so there doesn't seem to be a conflict. I don't think Michael is.
Anthony here. I don't normally have a conflict on that day of the month, but for December I do have a conflict.
Oh, you do? So you can't make the meeting.
Right.
Anybody have another date they would like to suggest? I don't...
Jared, do you know what dates are open for this type of meetings? Because many people are in different...
Yeah, the PNB, December, Monday the 5th is open. Friday the 9th is open.
I can't do that. But after that December, because the person, I'm sorry, I don't know who it was, said after December or December they're not. Maybe people next year would not be available. Maybe we get the tally of that and then look.
No, Anthony, I think we're talking about December, right, Anthony?
Or just December.
That's right, yes.
Oh, just one meeting, okay.
So that's
we have an unpaid staff meeting that evening.
I see. There's a personnel committee meeting on the 15th. Is nobody's here on personnel, I don't believe? Thursday the 15th. I know the Otis and John do not like to have two meetings on the same night because they have to stream two meetings, and that makes a real complication for them. But I don't know why personnel has two meetings scheduled, one for the 15th and one for the 16th.
Can we just stick with the 6th if there's only one member that can't make it? I mean, maybe that's why we don't have other... I mean, I don't know why the other people are absent tonight.
Yep.
What time is your meeting, Anthony?
It's not until 7 our time or 10 your time.
Sure.
So you could make part of our meeting, right, if we scheduled it for...
main part of our meeting, yeah.
Yeah, I could.
All right, well, let's do that then. We'll keep it the 6th, if that's all right. Is everybody okay with that? Make the next meeting for Tuesday, December 6th.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, is it, I don't remember if this was the way it was, that at each meeting we would maybe consider another day, because I have this on my schedule part of, you know, it's going on through the year. Am I wrong?
I think that's what we had hoped. No, that's what we had hoped. I just wanted to confirm, because we moved it from a Wednesday, I think, to a Tuesday. And, if that's good, that's fine. Thank you. Old business, then, the issue is the database integrity work group. And I had listed some items in there. There are 5 items now, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 items. Mm-hmm. 5, I'm sorry. Let me begin with a little bit of a report. The Elections Committee motion that we passed at the last meeting is scheduled to be on, it's on the agenda for the PNB, but the meeting for tomorrow night has been canceled. So the next PNB meeting is not until the 10th. And I expect that motion to pass then, because it's coming up very soon. If that's a continuation meeting, it should come up early in the meeting to be passed. The reports and replies from the general managers, I know that the executive director, Arlene, has talked with general managers. I sent them a letter today. I've made occasional phone calls. I haven't gotten responses. But I think our next step, and Arlene said she would appreciate that, is if we created a checklist for her to give to the GMs of what needs to be done and perhaps when. So that's a task that someone could take on if they like, or we could do it tonight.
Can I speak to that?
Please. Mm-hmm.
I think that that some of the backup information in our motion actually was a checklist.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm.
So I think that probably covers about 90% of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll send her that and remind her of that if we don't want to do anything else. I thought, though, that maybe very, very specific about the NCOA and the post office regs, I think that some of the new GMs don't understand that stuff. So it might have been good to be a little bit more specific than that. I'll work something up with that original motion. And if that's all right with everyone, we'll just send it on to the executive director to give to the GMs. Next point was work by others. I had written the financial recovery group and volunteers. Jamie Ross and Ken Aaron have volunteered to work with this committee on some issues related to membership, increasing membership and so on. Some of that had to do with the database. Maybe this is not in the correct place, but the question is,
Did somebody new come on?
Kimberly.
Kimberly, hi.
We were just writing you off.
I know. I felt it in the air. I said, wait a minute.
All right.
Elections Committee.
Good to have you.
Hello.
Getting tough helps. Okay, good. glad to hear you. All right. Do you have a copy of the agenda in front of you, Camaria? I sent it out.
I'm not at my computer. A friend of mine has let me graciously get into the calls. I don't know how long we'll be here.
Okay.
I have time to pull things up.
We're discussing the work of the database integrity. Carolyn is reporting on the work that's been done in working with the ED on the advanced work, if you will, that needs to be done in terms of cleaning up our list.
And the other item is volunteers from that group, and if there are other groups. That is an issue. Do we want to broaden our base a little bit? And then the next item I put in was protocols for monitoring the GM progress re-list. I guess that's the same issue. Do we need more detailed lists or not? I don't know if anyone wants to speak to that issue.
This is Jane. So concerning the volunteers, the fact that Jamie Ross is with the Financial Recovery Group is just incidental, right? Basically, the work by others, Ken Aaron, we've determined, actually is the director representative from A. Is that correct or not?
Yes, that's correct.
From
K.
K. Hey, I'm sorry.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So his involvement is expected. Then so Jamie has volunteered to assist with what? With increasing, what did you say?
On that committee, I put out a call for volunteers to work on the membership and the membership enlargement and the membership, increasing membership.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And encouraging membership, especially by means of working on electronic balloting, if possible.
What is the difference between membership enlargement and increasing membership?
Well, part of it is in my mind at least, part of it, the problem is that a lot of our members are not interested. If we get 10% quorum, we're lucky. And so we need to increase interest and participation, and then we also need to reach out to some new members. We have, you know, a couple of months in which to do that. So those two issues.
No,
membership.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Sorry, who was that? Who do I hear?
I just wanted to ask to say something. I just wait for you.
Manajay, no, go ahead. You're next.
No, I was thinking that this the motion, the volunteers in work groups is put in new business. This is an old business. We had been working on it before. And last meeting it was discussed, I guess.
Uh-huh.
But we are just introducing this motion, so maybe this motion needs to be ahead before we talk about volunteers in the group to see how the committee is thinking about this motion that was presented.
All right, that's a good point. All right, well, then we'll just put everything in suspension until we get to that motion.
Yeah.
And then the last item Jane had introduced as an amendment, the staff list registry progress report on that.
Who's been working on that?
I guess I have. I had asked Otis and John, and I think that given their workload, that the soonest we can get a staff list registry that is ready to go at all the stations completed is probably going to be December 1st. But I know that two stations at least have started to collect data on their staff members.
Otis, and who else is working on with us on that?
The National Tech Coordinator, John Almella.
Otis and John are working on that?
Yes, they're doing the software. I think Otis wrote the code for it, and they're bringing it up to date. One of the missing pieces in it was keeping track of staff members' work hours, and then making it easy for staff members to access and so on. So it needs a little work. And the estimate I got from John was that it would be December 1st before they were ready to really implement it. So that means that there will be, you know, electronic way for staff to log in and register their hours and be kept track of. That's the easy part. We don't have anything similar for members. Of course, membership database were reliant on other means, but that's all I know about the staff list registry. Any questions about that? Or no?
Well, this is Bob. I have a
yes,
comment
Bob.
On it.
Mm-hmm.
The issue that was raised when this was first created a couple of years ago was that the the monitoring of hours is something that is really is really kind of an arbitrary process, because many unpaid producers do their work in bits of time, you know, often from home, much of the time from home, researching a topic or, you know, preparing a script, calling guests, calling back guests when they don't call them, et cetera, et cetera. We could go through a long list of things that happen. So it's not something where you can say, I worked on Wednesday from 3 to 6 p.m. on producing my show. So, you know, that's really not a very practical way to... There is no way to kind of monitor the hours put in by an unpaid staff person. There's a reasonable formula that's been followed for 25 years and was embraced by several of the election supervisors, which is for a public affairs show, generally, I think it was 10 hours of production per 1 hour on the air. And for music, it was less. I don't remember the exact amount, but I could find it. So in any case, that's one concern about that registry. And the other concern is that the election process was always established as a separate process from management's list, in the sense that there are some people, for whatever legitimate reason, may decide that they don't want to give a particular address to management, but they do want to exercise their right to vote. So they would give one address to the election supervisor and a different address to management. So, which is why those, you know, those lists have been kept separate. So that needs to be protected. That right to, you know, control where your mail comes needs to be protected. So those are just some concerns.
Yes, thank you. Before you do, though, Ken, I can speak to one of those items. Otis has already addressed the privacy issue. And that will be covered. People will be able to maintain secret addresses, if they wish, on that list, according to the way the software is being run. And so far as the other ways, there's no such thing as I think, total trust. Somebody's going to have to say how many hours they worked, and somebody's going to have to approve of it. Who that will be is up to management, but I don't think we can get around that. Ken, yes, you were going to say something. Ken, you're muted. Ken, you were on the stack, but you're muted. We lost Ken. Okay, anybody else want to say anything? Hello? Hello, anybody hear me?
Jane, I hear you. I'm not
managing to hear you.
Everybody's okay, I didn't get lost. Is Ken back? Ken, are you back?
Is this star one for this one to get muted?
This is Ken. I got disconnected temporarily.
Yeah, we gathered. Okay, what happened? Well, you wanted to speak to this issue?
Yeah. Is there a cue or can I speak?
No, we've been waiting for you, actually.
Okay, so the thing is that the reporting of hours in the interface is self-reporting. The person puts in the hours. And so it's not an automated thing like a time clock. So there's no difficulty with a person, whether or not they worked at home or on the subway or taking a bath or at the station. They just report the hours they worked. And one of the things we're trying to mitigate against is... one-hour a week show having 20, 30, 40 volunteer staff members who are voting in an election, because that's an abuse of the system. I'm sure that wasn't the intent of the bylaws, because it skews staff elections, and we really should address that. I'm sure nobody supports that kind of an activity. So also, and as Carolyn said, the person can always submit a P.O. box or something, but I wouldn't understand how we would have anybody even volunteering if we don't have a way to contact them and call somebody if they are injured. I don't think we should have volunteers in the station unless we have contact information on file. Seems to me to be grossly irresponsible. So So I don't see what the secrecy is unless we have CIA people working on a program or something, or people who are wanted by Homeland Security or something. I don't see what's wrong with having a phone number, email address, or a P.O. box or something. How do we contact the person? Let's say he left his watch, and we want to contact him. Say, hey, we got your watch here. Who do we call?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of bizarre. You know, mm-hmm. It's not like as if we're living in 1984. You can't do that and be on the radio, I don't think. But in any event, reporting of hours is just self-reporting. It's not monitored. It's not time card. It's not done with thumbprints or anything like that. It's done on the good faith basis that the person will say, I worked 10 hours this week on the program.
Okay, Manajay, and then I want to get on stage after anyone else. Go ahead, Manajay.
I agree with Ken. This is actually absurd to me to hear that somebody who's connected to BAI or producing at BAI, but they don't want to be contacted. So this is one-way stream relationship. And if there is need to be contacting them, it has to be, and also I think should be required to have legitimate and, you know, working contact information with people. If they don't want to be, if they don't want to be that anonymous, maybe they shouldn't be at the station.
I'm sorry, this is Ken. I just got to get back on the stack. There's one issue that I talked about a lawyer with this that I do want to bring up here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. When a person's a volunteer, they're not getting paid. They don't have any expectation of delivery of goods or services or benefit. If they're expecting a benefit, then they're not volunteers. They're at least interns, like they're receiving training. But if a person's a volunteer, they're giving freely of their time and effort. So if
Hi, Margie Murray.
Hi, Margie. So if we have a standard for volunteers, such as we'd like to know your name, address, and phone number, and they say, well, I don't want to give it, then we have every right to say, well, you can't volunteer, because we're not denying them anything, because they're volunteers. They're giving to us freely. And we're not denying them anything. So, and this is a legal thing. Like if you sued somebody and said, well, they wouldn't let me volunteer, and the judge would say, what did you lose? I lost the opportunity to dedicate my time to this cause. Okay. There's no damage there. You know.
Okay. Thank you, Ken. I did want to say one other legal thing that I had heard an objection was from the insurance company. The insurance companies, for liability, need to know everybody who was working for us, paid or unpaid. And the classic example happened, I think, at KPFT. A volunteer broke his leg, and nobody knew anything about him except a nickname. And they didn't know who to contact. They didn't know what his name was. The ambulance couldn't be told anything. So it is a legal requirement to have some contact information. And if the software makes vision for two addresses, one public and one private, I appreciate that, but there has to be something on record. The other thing I'm worried about is the number of people self-reporting in an abnormal situation. You know, 30 people reporting that they all worked for to produce a show that airs 1 hour a month is kind of ridiculous. So I would like to see us develop some proposal for figuring out hours for large collectives producing a show. How are they supposed to allocate the ballots if they're only allowed two ballots each? I mean, two ballots for the entire collective, and there are 20 or 30 people on the collective. They have to figure out how to allocate the ballots, who gets to vote. And I don't know whether the Elections Committee should make a proposal, or I don't quite know how to deal with that, and I'd be happy to talk about that. But my fear is that at the end, the supervisors will be met with unreasonable demands for ballots from people who cannot prove that they did anything. And so I do want the number of hours on that form. And even if it's self-reporting, I would like a producer to say, yeah, that's right, that person did all that work, or no, I never heard of that person. somewhere a producer has to be responsible for the self-reporting of people who never show up at the station and work from home. I don't know. Again, we need some formal proposal. Is anybody interested in working on that?
It is. Can I ask a question?
Working group?
Who is this?
Manager, could I ask a question?
Manager, and then who was speaking after her?
Anthony.
Anthony. Okay, Manager first, and then we'll let Anthony go first, Manager, because...
Okay, sure, go ahead. Go ahead. He knows more about
the problem. Is this another working group that's being proposed? I'm not clear.
No, you can do it all by yourself if you like. You don't need to form a group. Are you interested in working on that?
Restate the issue again, please.
Well, the issue is how to allocate ballots proportionate to the number of hours worked and the number of hours on the air. And my hypothetical was if you have a show that's produced 1 hour a month or 2 hours a month and you have 30 people in a collective, they can't all be doing, 10 hours every month to produce that show. How do we figure out how many ballots the show gets and who in the collective gets those ballots?
Carolyn, I'm sorry, this is Jane. Could you just restate that one more time just for clarity? So the issue at hand is how many, in the case of collective, right?
Right. Well, there's a bylaw standard for what makes a volunteer eligible to vote.
Okay,
and that
so
30 hours in 3 months.
Right. So in the case of collectives, the
mm-hmm.
question is a little confusing.
That's correct.
And so in the case of collectives,
How are the number of hours worked computed? In large collectives, I mean, it only takes so many hours to produce 1 hour on the air. And if 30 people are claiming that they all worked, to produce that 1 hour for the month, who's to say they did or did not? It couldn't possibly need all that time. So the question is, how are we going to decide how many ballots collectives get?
So the outstanding issue concerns how many ballots collectives receive. In other words, how are the number of hours computed in the case
mm-hmm.
of large collectives?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure why this has come up again, but we've hashed this over quite a few times on the committee in the past, and a voter is a voter, not 40% of a voter or whatever.
Okay, can I?
So I think you either qualify or you don't. It's not that there are 10 people and you're only going to get 6 ballots or something like that. You just have to. And people, I don't know if there is genuine evidence of this, but when people, I've heard people raise this before, and it, in my experience at KPFA, and I'm only speaking from that experience, it's seems to me that it's a canard because we don't have any collective that claims to have 30 members who worked on a show that airs 1 hour a month. It just hasn't happened.
I do think the worst possible example I ever saw or heard of from Les Radke actually came from KPFA. It wasn't 30, but it was close to it. Manager?
Yes, I have a question. I don't know even why we are discussing this, but now that we are discussing it, I have a question and maybe a comment. First of all, do I understand it correctly that for each hour of program, 10 hours of work, prep work and all that is considered for it? Is 1 hour of program equals 10 hours of preparation? Is that correct? This is what I heard tonight.
Bob offered that standard. I don't know that standard.
Okay, so would that one, in terms of our concern, in terms of what we are concerned about, would that one 10 hours for once a month, how would, Okay, is there any exemption of membership for that, all any producer or all producer, even if they don't pay their minimum amount or all? So this would exempt them from paying, but they would be eligible to vote, that producer. Is that the case?
To be a staff member and get a ballot so you can vote as a staff
member. For example, if I'm
producing,
if I'm
30 hours in 3 months.
No.
Even if the program.
Point of information here: there's a difference between a volunteer and an unpaid staff member. A volunteer works for 3 hours, and he gets a ballot as a listener sponsor. He votes for the listener sponsor LSB members. An unpaid staff member works 30 hours in the last 3 months, and he gets a ballot to vote for the staff LSB members, which is a much smaller election because there's only, 50 staff members. So his vote has a lot more weight in a staff election than if he does 3 hours as a volunteer, he votes for LSB member, he's voting in a population of 2,200 people. And therefore, his vote has much less weight.
I understand. It means the share the so.
Sure.
I understood that. Now, if one producer, this is what Karen, you were raising. If it's not 30 people who work with this one producer, but if it's one other person works with this producer, what does it mean in terms of their? And this is going to be unpaid staff. Because the other, volunteer is very clear about one unpaid staff. If two is a collective of two people, for example, if two people are working on a program, how do they allocate times for them to work to be able to vote on election? Is there any specific regulations on that, which is universal?
I believe currently anybody who works 10 hours in the last 30 days, 3 months. Excuse me, 30 hours in the last 90 days or 3 months is entitled to a staff ballot. That's it. It doesn't matter if it's 50 people on one show or two people on one show. If the person worked 30 hours in the last 3 months, they get a ballot. That's all it is.
And if you ask the question, and that is going to be regularly per program or fair activity reported and documented someplace. But the only reason that I'm asking this question came to out of this discussion that you all of a sudden have, not 30 people, maybe 5 people claim that they have been doing this all along and they need to get ballot, and then we have the problem of people coming to vote where we're not necessarily eligible. So how do we do
that? That is the question, and the issue came up. We're discussing it because we were discussing the staff registry software and how people were going to say how many hours they worked. If it's self-reporting, I put down that I worked 100 hours last month and nobody saw me and nobody has any evidence of it, then I'm suggesting that we need a producer to verify that and say, yes, she did the work. But otherwise, we need some system. And my question was, since we don't have a system, would anybody like to make a proposal for including some way of validating this question in the software?
I would like to hear from Bob. Bob, can you talk about some of the questions that was raised? Because you are a volunteer, and not unpaid staff, as the way I know it. Could you please talk about the issues that you have been dealing with or have heard or you think about? I would really appreciate it.
Sure. Okay. Thanks. So I think Anthony addressed some of these questions earlier in a very clear way. This system has been going on for many years, and contrary to a lot of claims that are made all the time about this abuse or that abuse, there's never been any number anywhere even remotely close to 30 people in one collective claiming voting rights. That hasn't happened. Now, as far as the question about, how many hours does it take to produce a show, first of all, let's remember that when you have multiple people producing a show, it doesn't mean that you know, there's a finite amount of work, and they split it up among themselves, right? If I'm going on the air with my co-host, I have to read the book and, you know, do the research just as much as my co-host. It's not less time because there's two or even three of us. You know, this happens all the time, that everyone has to do a lot of preparation if they're going to participate in asking questions and, you know, playing a meaningful role in the show. So that's one thing. The other thing is that in the Internet age, most shows that I'm aware of have a website. And that, in and of itself, can be a huge project that obviously depends on the energy and time that collective wants to devote to the website. But so they may never appear on the air. And this happens, a couple of collectives I've heard about this, where one person, their main job is to just constantly update the website, put, you know, when the show is finished airing last week, then they put the sound file up there and, you know, whatever, all of those intricate and involved tasks. So there's a lot that goes into it. And the bottom line that has come up every time this topic has been raised is that there's a really unfortunate tone of distrust about people who have devoted years of their lives to not only not getting a penny from Pacifica, but actually expending hundreds of dollars out of their own pockets to produce programming that often raises tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars for the station over many years. So the idea that they would be distrusted and that they must be verified, as opposed to saying, you know, you let people self-certify and they're, you know, everyone's public record is pretty clear at the five stations as to who's on the air and who plays a role in the show. And then if there's really something that looks like it might be an abuse, like if there was this mythical case, never existed, of 30 people claiming from one show to...
Margie Murray.
That was an example.
Excuse me, I'm in the middle of a sentence.
Well, this is not a myth.
Let's finish.
Thank you. So the point is that you know, were there to be such a case, then fine. That's what the election supervisor is there to do. Is, you know, the people say, oh, there's 30 of us and we've all put in 30 hours in the last 3 months. Fine. Then the election supervisor would say, wait a minute, this doesn't look right. I would like to see much more detailed evidence. Please, you know, they could talk to, you know, a coordinator of the collective and say, please, I want to see the details. What role does each of these people play? What is the type of work they do, et cetera, et cetera? Mm-hmm. You take that on a case-by-case basis when there's a complaint, but not make it across the board. And that's the other final problem I'll end on is I recall from the discussion among the staff at BAI, at least, and I think at other stations, maybe Anthony can address this, of the registry, is, you know, folks think, oh, it's not onerous, it's not a big deal to just have you once a month fill out a little form, this month I did 10 hours, this month I did 15 hours, whatever. Actually, it is. You know, we're already doing a lot of work that we don't get a penny for, and then to add this paperwork on top of it, which is based on distrust, as opposed to saying, you know, when the time comes for the election, then those who say that they are still producing, you know, you get in touch with them and see if, in fact, they would still say that they've put in the number of hours. And, you know, and then the election supervisor can deal with complaints on a case by case.
Jane, I'd like to get on the stack.
I'm done.
Thank you, Bob.
Margie,
and then Jane.
And Michael Novick, I'd like to get on the stack, too.
I'm sorry, who else is?
Michael Novick.
Michael?
Michael, hi. I'm taking notes for you.
Thank you. Sorry to be late.
Well, just to address the point that Bob put out there, we currently at KPFK do have a collective of 30 people. I'm not saying that the collective is not doing the work, but I do think they do have an ordinary power at the voting thing and the staff election. So, number one, Bob, it does exist, okay? So it's not a mythical thing that's happening. It's happening. So I don't know how the committee wants to address it. I think I'm glad that people are so interested in the station, but it does create some kind of disparity with rights of other programmers to have their opinions heard. And I'll just leave it at that and go to the next person on the stack.
Okay, thank you, Michael.
Yeah, I'm sorry to have gotten on the call late. You know, I think that to go back to the bylaws in a sense, there are essentially two classes of membership in Pacifica. There's staff and there's listeners. And for both classes, we basically have sort of a monetary standard, incoming or outgoing, and a volunteer standard. In other words, you can be a listener, a sponsor, member, either by making a cash contribution or by making a time contribution, which is relatively small related to the cash. And then you can be a staff member, either by being paid by the station to do work or by volunteering your time for something that's gainful for the station in terms of not only production. In other words, but we pay all kinds of staff people, some producers and some other people. And people can volunteer their time for production or for other things, either as a collective or other mechanisms, seem to me. So I'm not clear why the whole question of the numbers of people involved, if people are, promoting the station and particular shows on the station as part of their volunteer work for the station as unpaid staff, then that should be recognized the same as people who are being paid to do that work.
Okay, I'm going to put myself on the stack after Jane. Jane, you're next, I think.
Yeah, Ken, I wanted to get back on the stack.
Too. Oh, Ken, I'm sorry, sure. Mm-hmm. Jane first and then Ken.
I think this is maybe too big of a discussion for this meeting and should be forwarded to a work group to be picked up at another meeting. But I did want to just make one comment that the whole conversation actually leaves me a little confused, because the bylaws say that that the staff membership, the qualification is a member has been recognized by station management, or if the station is neither such organization. I'm sorry, my thoughts are not clear, but it seems like it should be a lot more clear-cut than the way it's being discussed tonight. I can see it's not, but...
Yeah, no, it is messy. You're absolutely
okay.
Right. It's hard to... I think a work group... I'll take that as a motion, and we'll hold that in abeyance until the end of the discussion. Ken?
First of all, Michael came in late. We went over briefly over what the bylaws say about volunteers, unpaid staff, and staff, and what the elections they vote in. We know that. As regards what Bob was saying about the volunteers dedicating time and money and not getting acknowledged properly, well, that may be, but I consider it a privilege to have the opportunity to broadcast on any of the stations, and I think that you could find a queue of people who are willing to take slots. And very few people want to give them up, even though they're not getting paid. So I think it's a privilege and so forth. However, it may be even that technically the bylaws don't limit the number of staff members working on a program for unpaid staff. However, it's not uncommon that in any kind of a system of law, people will find a loophole and take advantage of it. It is innately... a violation of electoral democracy to have one show get 30 votes that produces an hour a week or an hour a month, and another show that might produce an hour a day get 2 votes. It is an inequity. And it may be it's a loophole in the bylaws. It doesn't mean we have to tolerate it. It's an inequity. It's not fair. And contrary... most positions, quite often the shows with the greatest numbers of producers make less of a contribution to the mission statement and the preservation of the foundation than shows that are produced by fewer numbers of producers. But that's not even a point to discuss. The point is, it is an injustice for a person who's dedicating time and putting on a show that's contributing to the mission statement and to the station and to the network, to have 1/5 or 1/10 the influence in staff elections that another show does, because they have 30 people supposedly or allegedly contributing. This is all coming up in the conversation about a staff registry, which is meant to put some order into the stations, which has additional functionality besides assisting us in determining who the staff is for who gets ballots. It has other legal ramifications. And the point is, at this point in time, it is an occluded piece of information. Who gets staff ballots is a mystery, because there's no record of who's on staff that is transparent, that is visible to the LSB or the PNB or the public. You cannot find out who the staff are, except for those that are listed on the Internet as, you know, producers and hosts. Very few of the staff are listed, certainly not all the volunteer staff members. So it's a complete occlusion. It's going on the trust of the statement of the national election supervisor or the local election supervisor making a decision. That is inadequate. There must be public transparency to see who's included, who's getting staff ballots. And in this case, the public could be limited at least to the LSB, so the LSB can see, or the staff can see, who's getting staff ballots. Right now, it's a mystery. And there's one other point on this, which I'm trying to... Oh, I think I might have lost it. But we just want to make the staff... the elections... That's the other thing. The staff registry will enable the staff members to get their ballots. Every election, we've had problems with this. We've had to run staff elections two or three times in some stations because we don't know who the staff members are, because they're reported late, because they're not. There's no tracking. And somebody says, I found five more staff members here that we didn't have an address for. I don't know. I just heard they're on this program. We discovered them. They just came back. So that's why we need a little bit more organization and transparency. We're just talking about the staff registry here to assist in an orderly election. And, you know, I agree. You know, you can come along and say, and you may have a vested interest in saying, I want to have the power to have all my votes in the staff election. And if I get some other people to volunteer on this show and they put in 30 hours in the last 3 months, I'll get more votes and I can get my candidates elected. And it's inequitable to the other people who are busy working on programming, who also have a right to be represented fairly as a participant in the staff. I think that's all. I'm getting a little bit redundant here.
Okay, thank you.
But I think a committee should, you know, I agree with what Jane said. It may be too confusing and it may require a subgroup to take a look at the bylaws and how other similar organizations work in this regard, and or, you know, which may or may not apply. We might be unique. We might do something that nobody else does, no other union or broadcasting company. But that's fine, and to see if there's some kind of improvement that can be made. But as far as I know, the staff registry has already been approved by the PNB, and it just hasn't been implemented because the GMs are slow to put it in. Somebody's got a vested interest in maintaining secrecy about who's the staff and who's the volunteer staff. It's
Thank
just
you.
Slow
Thank
to put
you.
It
yeah.
in.
Yeah.